The PO Forecast with Hugh, Andy and Freddie. Proud to be Pompey.
Hi Pompey fans, welcome to PO Forecast episode 223. Well, it's a disappointing defeat against Wigan, but let's be honest, who cares? Join the podcast today is Andy Mitchmore. How are you, Andy?
Yeah, not me. Not in the slightest. Had a lovely day out. It was sunny. Met a few nice Wigan fans. Good time before... not before the game. Good time after the game in the brewery. It was a pretty enjoyable afternoon, all in all. And first time in about 10 years I've not really cared about the score of a game. So yeah, not doing too bad, thank you. Just surviving the week. We seem to get to Wednesdays at the moment, and the preceding Saturday feels like a long time ago. But yeah, penultimate game preview review pod of the year. Yeah, how are you doing, sir?
Yeah, I'm good. My liver is just about recovering from the mass parties of not feeling that great, and then Rob coming to stay here, going all the way to Manchester for Bolton away, having one day sort of like in bed with the lights off, watching television before going out on the Tuesday and all the carnage that is. So leading up to the weekend, I'm feeling like we're running on fumes a bit, but it's not really fumes. It's just like pure adrenaline now for Pompey being promoted.
And you've got approximately one other 72 hours before we start drinking for, well, birthday evening out and then drinking at South Sea Common. So enjoy the respite. This is more alcohol than I've had in about the year preceding, and it's been in the space of about 4 weeks, and my body is starting to fall to bits as a result, but it is entirely self-inflicted.
Yeah, we can't moan about that, can we? We can't moan about the toll of the party on us, considering, you know, what's going on with Pompey being promoted. So, as champions, in case anyone hasn't realised yet, obviously. Freddie Webb's not here. He's gone on some sort of pilgrimage back up north, up to Yorkshire, to reclaim his birthright as King of the North. I think is some sort of like family vacation. He's allowed a week off. Give the man some time off. So, Freddie, enjoy your family time.
I just see it as, what's that, the guy in The Last Kingdom that goes to try and retake his homeland? What's his name? Can you remember?
Uhtred of Bebbanburg.
Uhtred of Bebbanburg. That's the one. I thought I was going to have to Google it. I'm very impressed that you had that off the top of your head. I was going to go with Ragnar Lothbrok, but that's a bit too Scandi. But yeah, he's gone full Uhtred, I think, and is retaking the city of York. He's currently barricading the city walls. So good luck to him. We hope to have him back next year with his crown back where it belongs on his head and away from the evil Danes. Yeah, it's exciting. We do chat some crap, don't we? We do talk some rubbish in our intros.
Of course we do, mate. I mean, let's be honest, not a lot has happened for us after, you know, celebrating the Wigan game, which we are going to come on to, people. So if you're thinking, Uhtred of who? We want to talk about Wigan. We are going to get into that in a second because, yeah, do you know what? I'm going to let people know what's going on. I'm going to get into that little section right now. So, first of all, we are going to review the game against Wigan. Put on from that, we're going to give you a little bit of information of some roundups for the season. We'll get into our full season review later on next week when we know what's happened. But we're going to talk about a few bits and bobs there to do with finances. And then we've got the quite incredible Gary Hutchinson returning from the Stacey West to preview everything you need to know on the game, on the early kickoff on Saturday against Lincoln. And finally, we're going to give our score predictions before we go home and get ready to get ourselves ready, I suppose, for the weekend. So, Andy, let's talk about the Wigan game. As predicted, the team seemed a little bit laggy, didn't they? Let's prefix this game because we can't really be that annoyed with the team for coming out sluggish, considering, you know, we saw what they're doing, enjoying themselves, quite rightly so as well, let's be honest. The team deserved it. And maybe that was one of the reasons why, alongside the fact that there wasn't really anything to play for, was there? And the excitement of lifting the trophy. But let's get into the start of the game. 6 minutes in, Wigan looked dangerous down that right-hand side for the whole game, I think. And they got a little bit excited, didn't they, earlier on? They're like, oh, we've got a bit of space down this side, passing it around, and tried quite an adventurous back pass that really just played a beautiful through ball to Colby Bishop. Unfortunately, Bishop tried some sort of like really sort of creative little lob, didn't he? He tried to sort of like dink it with, but from 35 yards over the keeper, and it went just wide.
Colby Bishop, he's still on the piss. Yeah. Not his greatest moment. Again, everything we're talking about for this game, I'm prefacing it with, I genuinely couldn't care less, to be honest with you. I know that it's nice to finish the season strong, etc. And the players are, some of them are playing for their contracts for next year. But honestly, I'm not losing sleep over any of this. But yeah, if this was any other game week before this in the season, you would say Bishop has to be doing a lot better there, I think. And it wasn't even really close, was it? As soon as it left his boot, you could see it was going wide. But it kind of set the tone from a fan perspective for the afternoon, that the response was laughter. And it sort of gave that early impression of, okay, this is what the vibe is going to be for the game. Like, we're just going to enjoy this. And it kind of set our stall out as a fan base to just enjoy the game. Even before that, I think, just to quickly go backwards, the stuff before the game, really good to have the sort of memorial list go past on the big screen to sort of mark the Pompey fans who we've lost over the course of this year, a couple of whom like we've known from pod listeners and interactions on Twitter. So nice to see them commemorated. And then the whole Guard of Honour stuff that I think is pretty much a league requirement. They have to do it, but, you know, they still get that, you know, touch of class cliche on Twitter for doing it, even though it's yeah, the big thumbs up, the handshake emoji and touch of class and, you know, respect and a cap doth from, you know, that gif of the little kid with the little respect cap and all of that stuff. You love to see it. You know, always had a good relationship with Wigan, et cetera, et cetera. All of that. Yeah, so that was nice. And then, as you say, the first chance to us, and Bishop, honestly, I'm sure he'd be the first to admit, made a colossal mess of it. Having said that, it's not a clear cut, got to bury it chance, but it should have been a lot closer to putting us one up than it was. And then, yeah, we can kind of go on the offensive from that, don't we? The next few chances are all for them, up running up towards halftime.
Yeah, and Wigan must have thought, that little through ball to Colby Bishop probably wasn't that smart. However, there is still quite a lot of space down that right-hand side, and they have another chance 12 minutes in. From the right-hand side, Johnny Smith cuts inside. He just sees there's so much space in the middle. We're still sluggish, basically. And he drives into that space. Eventually, someone comes to close him down and he hits it really nicely, to be fair to him. And it just comes back off the post. Cannon's out. Charlie Kelman's there, but he's offside. It's a massive let-off for Pompey 12 minutes in. Unfortunately, don't really learn from that. And it's still all Wigan into the 22nd minute when they actually score a goal. More joy again down that right-hand side. Callum Lang's would have been booked at this stage as well on the left-hand side. Ogilvy's not having the best game either. So that left-hand side's completely open, really. Ball comes into the box. It's nudged down by Adenko, who sets up Luke Chambers for a lovely little play shot. It's a beautiful goal, really. It's really clinical. And Wigan are 1-0 up.
Tell you what it reminded me of watching it back was Watford beating Leicester in the Championship playoff final, you know, when Almunia saves that penalty and they break up the other end. And the actual pattern of play, that ball in from the right, the player movement at the far post and the nod down is so similar to the Deeney moment that it's really, I can't watch it back in our game without seeing that. And the thing that annoys me most about this goal is that the finish wasn't from the same position as Deeney was, because they've got no one floating around just outside the 6-yard box. So there's an extra phase of play, which kind of ruins the comparison to the Watford goal. But it is a nicely worked goal. It is certainly preventable. Yeah, Chambers, I think, had quite a good game overall, even aside from the goal. I thought he looked pretty threatening throughout. And Wigan came to play. Again, they didn't do the whole come back and sit back and defend. We thought it might be either a sublime or a ridiculous game. You know, it was either going to be a nil-nil or a really high scoring. I think we went like 5-3 or something, or 5-2 or something ridiculous. And it was weirdly in the middle. It's kind of not what we expected, in that Wigan actually just played well, like they'd been training all week. And Pompey didn't play horrendously in the last sort of half an hour or so, but for a lot of the game, they played like they hadn't been training all week, which, you know, they hadn't, quite understandably, and they've earned that right. I have no real issue with that at all. But yeah, it's a nice goal, and you're wondering if it's going to kick Pompey into gear. But I mean, Wigan created
another good chance before half time, didn't they? Before we went in 1-0 down at half time, I think they had another good chance. And then they came out second half, and Wigan had the next couple of chances as well, with Norris making a couple of good saves and a couple of their efforts from the edge of the box going wide. And then, yeah, second half, we come out a bit stronger on the whole and start looking like the team we recognise a bit more. Obviously, it was a bit sad to see. I think Kamara came off at half time, didn't he? Which was a bit sad. He didn't really get the Fratton Park probably farewell as much as we'd like to keep him. It's, unless Norwich go up in the playoffs, it's not happening, if we're being realistic, I don't think. So, yeah, it was a bit sad that we didn't get a proper goodbye to him walking off the pitch, getting the ovation that he's deserved from Fratton Park for his part this season. And then, yeah, second half kind of kicks us into gear a little bit. But even then, we don't really create anything clear cut until about the hour mark-ish, I don't think, from memory.
Yeah, no, there's some sort of half chances after half time, and we make the change both wingers up. MPH comes on, Lane comes on. Both of them have some block shots in, you know, before we score, so we're sort of trying to generate a bit of attack, but it's not really going on that well. And you know what's happening there. Marlon Pack decides to square it for Sean Raggett, who absolutely thumps one, and it sort of bends a little bit in the air, doesn't it? It causes the keeper a little bit of trouble. It's a long way out. Here's the shoot. All the Raggett for England chance come out as Fratton erupts in that. Unfortunately, it falls to Rafferty. He tries to head it on goal, but it's straight at the keeper. But that's the first real thing that happens, really, leading up before the second goal. And it's just direct up from Wigan. They hit it up from the back, from the goalkeeper, gets nodded around, and Josh McGuinness basically just holds off Shaughnessy and manages to put it in the back of the net. It's a nice finish. It's 2-0. Wigan, just quickly before we move on to the goal, are quite a bizarre team because their form against the top teams is excellent. They are an excellent team against the better teams in this league, and they've been really rubbish against the bad teams.
Mm.
That you feel like that is something that next season they'll be able to iron out. And you could tell that they're kind of a very talented team and probably will just be a team that push on next season. So it's not surprising that Wigan came to us and got a result, because they've been doing that all season against better teams. And we'll talk to Gary later on about the game against Lincoln. But I know they also won 2-1 away at Lincoln in the middle of their unbelievable run. So just a side note, really, isn't it? But it's not unexpected.
No, I think they've taken 6 points off Bolton this season, and I think they've taken 4 off Derby, from talking to Barry last week. I'm pretty sure that's what he said their record was. He mentioned the Bolton one quite a few times because they don't like Bolton very much. But yeah, they seem to perform better in quite open games, and then he said they struggle to break down sides who sit with two banks behind the ball and defend for the full 90, which is definitely something that we were never going to do in this game. So yeah, it's not entirely surprising. I think at one point the odds for this game, Wigan were 17-4. And I was thinking about it at the time, thinking that's actually a very, very good bet considering their record against the top few and how our squad are likely to be feeling on the day of the game based on the week they've had running up to it. And I didn't put money on it because I don't really bet much on football, except when I'm trying to tempt fate by betting on Bolton, Derby and Peterborough throughout the second half of the season. I've taken quite the financial hit making sure that we win the league. I'm taking at least partial responsibility for it because I don't bet on football because they don't come in. I'd estimate I've lost close to £100, potentially between 100 and 200 since 30 games into the season, just betting on our competitors who thankfully have all, dropped a hell of a lot of unnecessary points. But that's a different conversation for a different game. But yeah, I think they were a funny team to play against, and they are, I think they're going to threaten next season. I would completely agree with you on that. I'd be very surprised if they weren't fighting for minimum playoffs. I think Barry said that he was expecting them to be around the edge of the playoffs. I would expect them to be higher than that next season, depending on which teams come down and the financial status of teams like, Rotherham coming down, and whether, Sheffield Wednesday, whoever comes down with them. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. But I think Wigan will be up there next year.
Yeah, so do I. I actually had two bets on. It was Derby to win, Wigan to win, and Derby to win a draw. So I managed to back it and get a bit of money on that. Yeah, 17-4 wasn't too bad. So Andy Mitchmore, man of the people there, though, betting against us the whole time just to make sure
not betting against us, although betting
on the teams around us to win, which,
yeah,
man of the city, give you the freedom of the city, Andy Mitchmore, for that.
I did also bet against us in both the Bolton and the Derby games because I just wanted to tempt fate, and it succeeded both times. So again, I'll take partial credit for that. There's times when you're happy to take the financial hit, aren't you?
Let's talk about Yengi's wonder goal, shall we?
Oh, strike of the season. Should get him in team of the year, that.
Yeah, no, it is a good finish. Nominations.
It's a good finish, eh?
It's a good finish, yeah. It's one of those ones that we get him behind. Is it Jack Sparks who gets him behind on the left-hand side? I think it's Jack Sparks. Could have been Lane. I'm going to go Jack Sparks. This is how much attention I've paid to this one. Sparks, he gets in on the left. Plays a really nice ball to Colby Bishop. He finds him in that position. Pulled back. Perfect for a striker. It's a really weird shot, isn't it? It sort of cannons upwards. Not sure it's a deflection or he just hits it oddly. Comes off the bar. Yengi's in the right place at the right time, as you want your number nine to be. Buries it. It's 2-1. And then at the end, Pompey try and get a goal back, don't they? I'm feeling smug because I had a bet on a draw as well as a loss. So either way, I knew I was going to win. But at the same time, doesn't really happen. Fair play to Wigan. They're the better team in this game and deserve the win.
Yeah, I think so. Honestly, the most excitement in the Fratton end. There were some... I mean, what do you expect when you had out massive sheets of cardboard to, 5,000 mostly middle-aged men? They're going to have paper aeroplane competitions. It's inevitable. So that was probably the most exciting part of the game was... seeing people around us trying to throw paper aeroplanes onto the pitch whilst hoping that we didn't get hit in the back of the head. And thankfully, because we're quite near the back of the Fratton end, we didn't get absolutely smashed by... It's amazing how much velocity those paper planes can get when they're made well. There are some talented people in the Fratton end, I tell you. If you were one of them who managed to get the paper planes onto the pitch, fair play, your origami skills are on point. There were also some catastrophic failures that reminded me of, you know, those videos when humans were trying to learn how to build the first aeroplane and then they just jump off roofs and stuff and just fly straight into the floor. Some of the paper aeroplanes reminded me of that, but there were some real success stories in there. So yeah, fair play. There was also one person kicked out at the Fratton end, which again, you can't have a championship winning day if, I don't even know what happened, some sort of, I don't know, it was something down towards the further forward than us in the middle of the Fratton end. Don't know what happened. Sure, mate, you get kicked out. Just ticked all the boxes for a good home game, except the whole losing 2-1 thing. Yeah, I think their keeper had quite a good game, to be honest with you. Again, I'm not interested in the metrics for this. Couldn't care less. But I think our XG was probably higher than our actual goals scored because their keeper made a couple of really good saves. I think one from Pack and then he saved the rebound from I can't remember who. And yeah, just was solid, actually. Their keeper was one of the stronger ones I've seen at the park this weekend. And then, yeah, we get on to the end of the game. Firstly, thrilled that no one invaded the pitch. Nice to see a united common sense. So good on everyone who was at the game. My feeling was that you were going to get 30 or 40 idiots, maybe up to 100 max, but probably 30 or 40 running on, but no one did, which was excellent. And my next main takeaway was how vulnerable that Sky Bet Champions thing is. When you see it on TV, you think it's like a really good structure, but side on, it was like moving back and forth in the wind. And some of the kids' players were running around on it on the platform. And this Champions Arch thing was going back and forth. And you were just waiting for it to fall on them and for there to be some sort of accident. But yeah, those are the main takeaways. But I guess we should probably talk about lifting the trophy as well. I mean, that's not something that happens every day. I was trying to explain to Tarrell that, you know, this isn't something that you see every day as a Portsmouth fan. This is really her first season properly following them. Well, following them because of me. She came to games last season, but didn't really give her monkeys. And towards the end of the season, I'm going to grass her right up here. The last two games she watched, so she came to Bolton away and she came to this one. She actually said that she spent some of the games watching the football and being interested. And that is a massive progression. She still plays the Stone Island game where she just counts how many Stone Island tops she can see between 1 p.m. and 5 p.m. But she actually took some interest in the game as well, which is a large compliment to Portsmouth, I think. But yeah, trying to convince her that this isn't what she can expect every season.
Yeah, you got to temper expectations there, Andy.
We can't
be expecting that, especially going up into the Championship, let's be honest. So... although we've got all summer to talk about that. So yeah, obviously lifting the trophy, big moment for the team. Good to see it for the players as well, being able to spend that time with their families, walking around, soaking in the moment without all of us lot jumping on them, lifting them up, crowd surfing them, whatever happened to Paddy Lane. So overall, what a day. Caps off a great season. We still got another game to talk about, which we're going to come on to with a really actually pretty good preview, to be honest, with Gary, who obviously has a lot more interest in this sort of result than we do. We talk about the playoffs a little bit as well. But before I get onto that, Andy, as he sits there trying to locate his hamster. No, she's found now. Gita is located. Hey,
she jumped off the back of the sofa while we were recording the other week. Then if you saw, like, she literally jumped off from a height of about 2.5 feet. And she got lucky. You know, in films when people like fall off a cliff in cartoons and their fall gets broken by like horizontal branches every 20 feet or they like hit stuff on the way down that breaks their fall. She did that with a blanket and her outdoor play area. Otherwise, I think we'd have had a bit of a fatality on the pod. She is also getting old, by the way. I'm not entirely convinced she's going to survive the summer break, which is a slight concern. So if we have the blacked out Pompey News Now logo for the first pod back of the new season, I want the listeners to understand why, because it will be a very subdued atmosphere. And I might go full Queen Victoria, I think, and just dress in black for the rest of my life.
You know, we can all wear black armbands is what I was going to go for. More the footballing approach. Rather,
I was going to drop an email to Johnny Moore and see if we could get the Portsmouth players wearing black armbands. I'm going to get her on the bloody roster next year. If she dies during the season, I'm going to send in her name as if she was a human and get her on the big screen. I think that's definitely got to happen. I'm going to try it, genuinely. So if she dies during the season next year, she won't survive the whole season, I don't think. Then please, listeners, keep an eye out on the scoreboard on final home game, because there will be a Gida. I've got to decide what surname to give her.
Mitchell Moore.
No, because then people will think one of my relatives has died.
Oh yeah, true.
I don't want that. We need to think of a Gida forecast or a Gida PO4. I don't know. We'll think of something. We've got hopefully plenty of time. Anyway, we've got sidetracked, mate. You were about to tag me in for what I'm guessing was some Pompey finances stuff.
Yeah, exactly. You've read my mind, or maybe we just talked about it before we started podcasting, but why don't you give the listeners a little overview of the finances? I know the numbers have now come out in the accounts of who spent what in the league on player transfers and borrowing as well, debt against the club.
Yeah, so this is the 22-23 season. So obviously the Portsmouth figures came out. We spoke about them, was it 2 weeks ago, potentially on the podcast, I think. Freddie came with a load of stats prepared. And all the teams who were in League One at that point have now provided their figures, their statements for that annual year running up to, because it's been released for the new financial year this year, and just make some quite interesting reading, some of it, seeing where Portsmouth rank on a number of these metrics, especially considering some of the hyperbolic rhetoric you hear, naming, you know, no names to do with planes and banners, which I don't completely agree with the message behind. But if you look at sort of player spending, so player purchases for 22 to 23, Pompey were the second highest spending in the division, and we were we were dwarfed. Ipswich spent over four times as much as the next team, and honestly can't have been far off spending the more than the rest of the league combined. I haven't done the maths on that. The total player purchases came to just under 16 million according to Kieran Maguire, and Ipswich's was just over 8 million. So Ipswich spent over half of the player purchase fees for the year by themselves, which is a startling fact. But yeah, so Pompey were second in that, just ahead of Bolton, Plymouth and Peterborough, rounding out the top five. But then in terms of borrowing money for that financial year, Portsmouth borrowed the third least. So the only two clubs that borrowed less than us were Shrewsbury and Wickham, who borrowed absolutely no money whatsoever. Sheffield Wednesday borrowed the most, which explains, you know, some of the difficulties they've been having since. And especially now they look like they might come back down again if things don't go too well for them at the end of the championship season. But I just think it says a lot. You know, the other week we were hearing about how the Isons have put, I think it's gone over 35 million, how much they've put into the club now over the course of their time here. And that translates into us not borrowing any money. For that financial year, us spending the second most in the division. But in terms of losses, we were mid-table. We were about 3 million for the financial year. We were just below mid-table for that. So again, for context, Ipswich made a loss of 18 million in that 22-23 season. Pompey, a sixth as much loss. So also interestingly, Exeter were the only team to make a profit for the financial year, which I think is quite an interesting one. It shows how unsustainable even League One football is, by the way.
I think Exeter are still fan-owned, aren't they, unless I'm wrong? So
yeah, I believe they
probably
are.
Probably the reason behind it.
I believe they are.
I think, have you got Charlton's figures there? When I slightly zoned out, because I think their figures are pretty shocking, aren't they?
Charlton's lost, they made the third largest loss in the division. So they lost just over 9.5 million for the 22-23 season. And I've closed my other tabs, to be honest with you, for their other stats. But yeah,
I heard on a podcast their whole turnover is basically spent on players as a club. So you have to pay for everything else effectively, as well as like the running the club, the team, all that kind of stuff. You know, the support, everything else basically is debt effectively at that stage. If the other podcast was right, so
that's horrendous, isn't it?
Absolutely bizarre, but maybe
accumulated losses. So Bolton with the greatest loss over. Really? Is that... That can't be right. The accumulated profits and losses made by League One clubs from all their years of trading came to a net overall loss of nearly £1 billion. So those figures are... That's mad. And yeah, Charlton, loss of 57 mil. But that's accumulated. So either way, it just shows how unsustainable most clubs in League One are. And the Eisners are doing us a solid... That is the short answer to what these figures show. And yeah, I think hopefully this type of statistic coming out kind of, you know, makes a point, because we've still got, I mean, it's an absolute minority. Don't get me wrong. It's a complete minority, but there are still social media individuals stating that the Eisners aren't putting money into the club. So yeah, it's a bit of an odd one for me.
There you go. That's a nice little roundup of the finances and how we're doing from there. Obviously, the parade's on Sunday. Get down. I was going to say get down early. I assume everyone will get down early. I think it's, what is it, between 1 and 4 officially? But,
yeah,
you know, just get down when you can.
Morning,
Bev. Somewhere to be. Get some beers in. Enjoy yourself.
Bring a picnic blanket. Is it going to rain? I read it was going to rain.
That'd be typical, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Giant umbrellas needed then.
Yeah, umbrellas and just, you know, a lot more alcohol. Warms you up from the inside.
That's it. Booze it up. Let's move on.
Before we do, can we just have a prediction on who the drunkest player is going to be? Who's going to be the Gareth Evans this year? Do you think Paddy Lane's going to go hard or go home? Or do you think that he will try and compensate for his Tuesday night antics and go a little bit more moderate? What do you think? I think this is an important pod question.
Rafferty, what a legend.
Do you think Raff will go hard again?
Thing is, I think he can handle it, though. He seems like a man who can handle his booze as well as going big.
He was really interesting because, like, in Drift, he looked like one of the most bevved up in there. But then about an hour later, when we chatted just before the end of the night, his conversation came across as pretty sober. Like, his slurring was definitely there. Like, he was definitely drunk, but he was actually able to hold a decent conversation, and you could have been tricked into thinking he was fairly not intoxicated. So I don't know where he was on that spectrum, really, of the whole... You know, Danny Cowley to Gareth Evans spectrum of no alcohol to, yeah, if you all ate scummers, clap your hands vibe. Like, I don't know where he was at.
If you're saying the biggest sort of person in that sense, what do you reckon? The Paddy Lane Sadie combination. I'm feeling that.
Sadie needs him.
Yeah, you're in that video as well. So am I right at the end? But
oh, really?
I've seen it online. Yeah.
No, I've not seen that. Are we in it?
Yeah, we're in it. You're in it. You're kind of focal point in it for at least 3 or 4 seconds. So
that's 4 seconds of fame. Drop me a buzz. I'm getting
all the
dimensions on social media this week on videos and such like.
There you go. Let's move on, mate. Let's move on. We spoke to Gary from the Stacey West to preview everything about the game on Saturday, which you really care about. We discussed what kind of Pompey team we're going to line up. We talked about the new revolution at Lincoln and the sort of the change from being just a defensive sort of side into, you know, attacking powerhouse in this league and how they play out of possession. We chatted about all kinds of different players. So here's Gary from the Stacey West.
Hi, it's Show After here. You're listening to Hugh, Andy and Freddie on the PL4 podcast.
All right, I'm here with Gary from the Stacey West. And Gary, thanks for coming back on the show.
Absolute pleasure. Let's hope it's not the last time.
Yeah, let's hope so for you guys' sake. And it's a big game, isn't it, that we're leading up to. But before we get to the game itself, Lincoln have been on a pretty incredible run, a charge to the playoffs almost, and defensively solid. I mean, I was looking at the numbers and I was really to prepare for your show, so go and have a look at that on YouTube, Pompey fans. But I was looking at our goals against and it was like 0.9 for the season, and Lincoln have just pipped us there at 0.8. I was thinking generally that you score a lot of goals, but is it your defence which you sort of built this run on as well as your goal scoring?
Great question. We survived early season on the basis of the defence. So we were really organised. Last season, we were really organised at the back. And since Michael Scobal has come in, he's added the attacking impetus. I think Mark Kennedy was, with respect to him, a kind of a one-trick pony, and he could avoid defeat or he could go and win games, but he couldn't find the blend. And quite rightly, he picked let's avoid defeat, but he got quite dour towards the end of his reign. Michael Scobala then has come in almost like taking over a new build halfway up when people have run out of money. You know, the foundations and everything are there. All you've got to do is add the bells and whistles. And Michael Scobala has been absolutely fantastic at doing that.
A few weeks ago, there was a sudden change, it seemed, in the League One scores every week as Lincoln started banging in. What was it, 16 in three games, something obscene like that. And that's probably what caught everyone's attention a bit more than your slow rise up to the table, because you've not been in bad form even up to that point. But I think that's what made everyone sit up and take notice a little bit around the playoffs. Was that just a case of those three games in particular just came out as above XG, or, you know, just the chances happened to go in, but you were creating the same amount? Or was there a real change in pattern of play when those goals started flying in?
I think there's been a change in pattern of play after New Year. And the obvious answer is because we had forwards. You know, for a long period at the end of last year, at the beginning of the season, we were playing Hakeem Adeleken through the middle. I think he played up top when we came to your place earlier in the season, because we lost Ben House to injury, Tyler Walker to injury, Jack Vale was injured. So having strikers, I know it sounds obvious, but that really helped. And we then, I think we drew 0-0 with Peterborough and 0-0 with Derby. And in terms of XG, we were better in both of those games. We should have won those games. And on our site, I was on the podcast saying this, I was writing it, somebody's going to take a tonking. You could just tell, because we were creating chances. Our XG was creeping up. In Joe Taylor, who we brought in on loan, we'd got a bit of pace. Ben House came back. Freddie Draper was a physical presence. Some of the kind of the attacking midfield players had started to find a little bit of form, started to click a little bit. We beat Shrewsbury 3-0 at Sinsel Bank. And I remember the headline was somebody took a thrashing or something along those lines, because I thought that was the pinnacle. I thought 3-0, wow, we scored three goals in a game that weren't penalties. And then it kind of snowballed a little from that. To a point where now I think teams have probably come to be a little bit more defensive. They're a little bit wiser. You know, sometimes you get that run of results because teams think it's a flash in the pan. They think it's a one-off, and you get kind of three or four games in before scouts go, right, we're going to have to start doing something about that.
And looking at your sort of forwards, obviously Joe Taylor's an exciting player. He's young, he's quick, he's play balls in the back, you know, in behind, but he also seems to be good with his head and stuff. And how important is it having a striker who can lead the line in such form for you? And is it a case of sort of building around someone like Joe up front? Is it sort of one of those reasons of having a sort of more of a dynamic attacker up front?
Possibly. I'd love to be able to build something around him, not me personally, but obviously he's going to go back to Luton. I think it's having a player who is confident once he scores a goal. For me, there are kind of three types of strikers, and we've got one of each. So there's a striker that doesn't score an awful lot of goals, will chip in here, there with one or two, may finish the season with 10, but he's a grafter, a hard worker. They press, they fight, and that's Ben House. There's the strikers that might take 10 chances and score five, but once they get one or two, their confidence grows. And that's Joe Taylor. I think he had 5-6 games when he arrived without scoring a goal, and he got one Exeter, we beat him 1-0. And as soon as it went in, you could just tell there was something in his demeanour, the way he started walking, the way he started moving around the pitch just changed, and he's not stopped. And then the other type of striker is the natural finisher who probably has to work a little bit harder to get the chances, and that's young Freddie Draper. So Fred's popped up with a couple of goals as well. He finished a goal against Cheltenham at the weekend. And if you watch it back, it's the type of goal that it doesn't matter whether you're in the National League or the Premier League. It drops to him in the area. He takes one touch, turn, volley, back of the net. They score that everywhere. Natural goal scorers will score goals at any level. And then you've just got to add everything else to the game. And that's Fred. So that's the kind of the three-man dynamic that we've had. And then we've had Young Jovan coming in as well. So it's a real kind of mixed bag of strikers. And, you know, if you've got two, three different threats rather than just two big lumps or two pacey strikers, you're always going to be able to ask the right questions, even if you've asked the wrong ones first, if you see what that means.
Yeah, I think Pompey fans will be able to relate a lot with that, with the options we have, just in terms of Colby Bishop or Cassini Yenge, both, you know, potentially most of the time playing in that nine role, although Bishop sometimes can drop into the 10 when Yenge goes up to nine later on if needs be. But they bring such different attributes to a game. So as you say, if the first 60 minutes Bishop has been ineffective or hasn't won anything, as was the case, was up at Bolton, Hugh, that was the case a few weeks ago where Bishop didn't get anything. And then Yenge came on second half to offer something a bit different. So I think we can definitely relate to that. Earlier in the season, I vaguely remember chatting to your pod or you guys as a preview, and there were some injury problems going on then. I think Tyler Walker maybe had just got injured. I think Rico Hackett might have been out injured at that point as well. I think there was just huge injury issues. And I mean, Hackett is injured with a different injury, I believe, at this point. And I think Tyler Walker is still out from the same injury. Is that correct, for the end of the season? So what's the injury situation now? Because those two players are familiar to Pompey and sort of conspicuous by their absence in the names you just listed.
Yeah, it's still crippling. Absolutely. So you're correct. At the beginning of the season, Tyler Walker was out. Lewis Monsma has been ruled out all season. We had Rico Hackett out. We had Ben House out. We had Jack Vale out. So I think coming after the Blackpool defeat in January, we had 11 players who would be in contention for starting the game injured. Last week against Cheltenham, I think it was seven who were unavailable. Dylan Duffy suspended, Rico Hackett dislocated his shoulder. We loaned Conor McGrandles from Charlton. He got four games out for the season. Ethan Hamilton out for the season. Ted Bishop out for the season. But bizarrely, whatever Michael Scobala touches, whatever the coaching team do, seems to work. So he's created Danny Mandroyu, who kind of came in as an attacking player, maybe plays on the left, seemed to not like the cold weather, seemed to not like the hard tackles, stuck him in holding midfield, and he's an absolute revelation, pinging 60-yard balls to feet. Absolutely phenomenal. Jovan Mukama, who we say we didn't have any strikers at the beginning of the season, but we did. We had this young kid who had been on loan at Bromley last season and played two games, couldn't get a kick for them. And we were kind of saying, well, if we need him. He's now coming on as one of our first choice changes. You know, big lad, 6'5", 6'6", or whatever, mobile. He's got a couple of goals. It's just like Michael Scobala, honestly, is like King Midas. But instead of whatever he touches turn into gold, whatever he touches turn into whatever position he needs him to be that week. So although we've got crippling injuries, we've got through it. If we were to get to the playoff semi-finals and you're coming up against a Bolton or a Peterborough, they might be laid bare a little more, but time will tell.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's quite like us with our injury issues and John Messina being able to find different players to play in different positions. When you said about Danny Mandroyu there filling in sort of centre midfield, it almost reminds me a little bit of, you know, Tino Angerin for us has recently played in the pivot as well and actually looked really good there, with really coming as an attacking midfielder from Chelsea as well, and just seeing that sort of ability on the ball and being able to transfer that, I suppose, and those skills to being an effective centre midfielder. But he's got two red cards, isn't he? So he's not scared of a challenge as well, Mandroyu in the middle. I'm quite interested of you guys on the right-hand side. Lassie Sorensen's a player that I really rate as well. He's quick. He can get up and down with or without the ball. And Pompey tend to like the left-sided left-back, so Connor Ogilvie or Jack Sparks even more so, sort of when we're in possession, join almost a front five, and then we sort of have a back three in possession with Joe Rafferty on the right. That can leave some gaps in behind on that side. And we saw Wigan against us, especially when we're off the ball a little bit and slightly hungover or laggy, whatever you want to say, there could be some space there. Do you think that's an area you can exploit in this system with Lassie getting in behind us?
I do now you've said that. Yeah, definitely. Lassie's a really interesting one because, again, he actually came to us as a central midfielder and many people were sort of writing him off, and he played right back a couple of times against Shrewsbury in the Cup and the League 2 seasons ago and looked like a liability. And he just stepped up last season. It's been outstanding. Now, what's really odd about Lass is whenever I watch on iFollow, I always have the opposition commentary on because you learn more from that than you do from your own commentators. And every opposition comms that I've listened to loves him. The blonde lad gets up and down, gets, you know, quick, he can put a cross in. The home fans look at him and he's always the 7 out of 10. So like we win 6-0, everybody gets 8, Lass gets a 7. We lose 2-0, everybody gets a 6, Lass gets a 7. So he doesn't stand out. I think he's won, we do ratings on the site, and I think he's got one man of the match award all season. But everybody's talking about him as a potential player of the season. He's that kind of consistent player. So, yeah, I mean, that does sound like the sort of thing we can exploit. And I think we saw it against Wigan. They had the boy Johnny Smith, who played for Burton, I think was playing on the right for him. And he was outstanding because he could get in behind, because he can exploit that space. So if it opens up, yeah, absolutely. And again, out of possession and in possession, we play very different kind of formations. So out of possession, it will be almost a five at the back with usually Rico, but it'll probably be Sean Rowan or Lass. But as soon as we start attacking, they get really, really high. And sometimes that goes to a three. Sometimes Lass will attack. The whole midfield will shift and actually go to a four. So you never know what formation we're playing or quite where players are going to pop up.
Spoke about out of possession there, which sort of twinged my ears slightly, because I always thought that you were always a very good counter-attacking team. But recently, I've watched you a bit and seen you seem to press more, especially in the first half. And we chatted about that on your show as well. So it's not all just my observations, but what can Bobby fans expect to see from Lincoln now out of possession, which we haven't potentially seen before?
Was Mark Kennedy in charge when we came to Fratton Park earlier in the season? So obviously we were really out of possession, 30% possession. So we're still happy not to have the ball. It depends very much on the opposition. So if we're playing an opposition who we don't think will hurt us when they're in the kind of the back two thirds of the pitch, that's fine. But we like to press high, and a lot of the goals that we've scored recently, particularly in that run where we scored the 16 in three games, we were high press. If somebody plays out from the back, you'll have Ben House, you'll have Freddie Draper, you'll have Joe Taylor, all on the press. And if it kind of springs through that, then often the wing backs will kind of come forward and drop in, and you know, it can be a really high tempo. And I think that's how we'll start the game. I think because we need a result, and because there's a train of thought that Pompey are kind of already on the beach, and I find that probably a disrespectful one from Lincoln fans, because professionals are professionals. But at the same time, will there be that level of intensity? Will there be that, you know, well, we don't want to get injured before we fly off to Mallorca a week on Monday or whatever, whereas, you know, we've really got something to fight for. So I think we'll come out the blocks early. We'll press high. We'll try and put pressure on any potential weak spots. If you've got a centre-half who's not as comfortable dealing with the ball, I know Sean Raggett used to like bringing it out, but his touch wasn't always the best. We might even sort of sit off the press until he gets the ball and then go in hard there. So again, it is unpredictable, because there have been games where we've gone, well, actually, you can just have the ball then and not pressed. So you can't actually say Lincoln play this way or that way. But the Y Scout stats, PPDA, ours has gone through the roof. We've become one of the most, Chris, who's on our podcast, calls it, one of the most pressiest teams in the division, which isn't a terminology I like, but I'll take it.
You're going to get a shock to the system when you see Sean Raggett this weekend, then. He's turned into prime sort of Fernando Torres, bringing the ball down first touch under high boards in the last few weeks. He's evolved as a player. It might be a treat for you when you start putting him under pressure. You mentioned sort of thinking you need the 3 points there this weekend. I mean, just for context for people who don't have the league table up in front of them while they're listening, it's basically in your hands, right? You're sitting in sixth at the moment on 74 points, with Oxford on 74 below you with a worse goal difference comfortably, and Blackpool a point further back. So basically, yeah, if you win, you cement playoffs. And if you draw, then it depends on, I guess, Barnsley's result, and there's a few other permutations. But are you thinking, like you said, you're going to start fast, go for the win, rather than trying to keep an eye on other scores around you? And do you think it's one of those situations where the match updates from other grounds around the country could have an influence on what happens sort of second half, in terms of whether you sit back on a one-goal lead or feel like you need to go for the second? Like, how much movement do you think there is there for change of plan based on other grounds?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. We're certainly going to, you certainly take the first sort of 45 minutes or whatever as we've got to win and pay no attention to anybody else. And, you know, there is there is a certain kind of set of results that would cost us a place even if we won. So I think if we beat you 1-0, for instance, and Oxford won 6-0, which, by the way, is the amount that they beat us in the game just before Michael Appleton took over, which was a horrendous afternoon. Technically, they could overtake us. And you've seen Peterborough's weakened side, and you've seen like Northampton and Bristol Rovers 2 seasons ago. So it does happen. So we'll be going out to win the game. And if we get one goal, I don't think we'll particularly sit back. We might not be quite as adventurous, but I still think that, you know, we will press relatively high. I've not seen a Michael Scabala side sit back on a lead recently, or probably the last 17, 18 games. So, but it's an interesting one because it's a completely different landscape, isn't it? It's one game that bears no relation really to the other 45, because for the other 45, you always think there's another game. You always think, we might be able to claw this back. We might be able to do that. This really is, you know what you have to do. We have to win. So if we're drawing, and it's 89 minutes, and Oxford are drawing and Blackpool are drawing, are you happy sitting back because you can't see what's going on at those other games? So as far as I'm concerned, and I would imagine it will be the same with the coaching staff, we go and do our job, and then at least we're not having to rely on anybody else. For the record, I think Blackpool will find it very tough at Reading. I think Oxford may find it tough against Exeter, who are massively in form. And they're two teams. I would rather be playing Portsmouth, best side in the division by a country mile, than I would Exeter or Reading, whose players have still got something to prove, almost. Portsmouth got nothing to prove. We've won the league. And psychologically, as I said, it's disrespectful to say that about a team, that they'll take their foot off the gas. But I just think sometimes it just happens. The players can think as much as they want that we're going to go out and we're going to put everything into it. But, you know, your guys' faces when you talked about the Wigan game kind of told me everything that I needed to know.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting one in that sense, because it almost has the feeling to me like a second leg of a playoff series sort of thing, in that sense of, because the other result does matter, but at the same time, it is an isolated game. So I'm sure there will be some coaching sort of intervention if it is the case that you've got to go and score a goal late on because something happens. You will see the subs bench maybe being utilised or something like that. But the mentality going into the game has to be, we just do our job and that's it, I suppose. I was actually asked to predict the results on your podcast, by the way, of who I thought was going to go up in the playoffs. So unfortunately, Charlie didn't give his comments as well. But looking at the game in isolation, I suppose, I'm going to ask you now about your score prediction for this game. But I completely agree about Exeter being a very difficult place to go to, especially. Can't see them winning that game. And Reading, they can be very hit or miss. So it's going to be a difficult one, really. And I'll fire over to Andy before I get into the actual score prediction. But I can see with us being a team who don't need to win, the parade is the day after. This could be something that, with Las Vegas on their mind, are we just going to take it leisurely and let you roll over? We'll have to see.
Yeah, I think the first half against Wigan was very much that, wasn't it? It was very much after the Lord Mayor show. And you could see in the final 20 against Wigan, they kind of bucked their ideas up and we banged the door down a bit for the last 20 and looked a little bit more like themselves. So it just depends whether or not you get the Pompey from the first 70 against Wigan, where genuinely, I know it's a football cliche to say there's a hangover from the week before, but there was I think it was a legitimate hangover watching some of them. Or whether you get that last 20, because you could see Messina wasn't happy. He was losing his rag a couple of times in that game, which you don't often see from him on the touchline. You could see he was genuinely quite annoyed by what was happening in front of him. Hugh, I was actually just going to ask you, when you were asked who your tip for winning the entire playoffs was, who you came up with, or do people need to go and listen to your other guest appearance to get that information?
People should go and listen. I didn't say who'd win the playoffs, because it is very difficult. I did say who I thought would qualify for the playoffs. So I will be interested to hear Gaz's score prediction first before I give my where I think that will be, and I'll give you my relation. So let's go into that right now. And what's your score prediction for the game on Saturday? And any goal scorers, please?
Just to give a little bit of context, if Danny Cowley was still your manager, 3-0 Lincoln win. Because as soon as anything was won, done and dusted, Danny eased off. We won League Two. We lost the last home game 3-0 against Colchester. So John Messina, with his Oxford connections, is going to want to do everything possible to try and make sure that we don't make it and Oxford do, in my opinion. I actually think that it will be a draw. I kind of buy this whole mentality thing. I understand that we're going to want it. Do you want it? But from the outside looking in, you can always be a little more objective. And as an outside football fan looking in at Portsmouth, you've got an outstanding squad. Yeah, you know, I'm not just blowing smoke up your ass because I'm on your guys' podcast. You know, you're the top of the league for a reason. It's not a season where one or three or four teams could be top. You're top because you're the best, because you've got a deep squad, because you play good football, because you have good football players. What have you lost? Five all season, two away, I think, if I'm correct, all season. Bristol Rovers possibly and something else, Cambridge maybe. So it worries me. I'm actually going to go rather dourly for a 0-0 draw. And part of my heart will be in Exeter and Reading, two great towns, so I've heard. So, yeah.
I've got a soft spot for Exeter as well. I used to live there. So, I'm all for having a soft spot for Exeter. I actually think it's going to be a 1-1 draw. And I think a 1-1 draw will be enough for you guys to qualify for the playoffs. I'm also being a little bit partisan because I also like Barnsley, got a soft spot for him. So I think they're going to, after this terrible run, are going to somehow pull out a result against Northampton. But with the other teams not picking up a win, I think that's going to be enough for you guys to qualify in that sixth spot. So that's my playoff prediction. And do you know what? Usually I say this thing where I go, oh yeah, good luck after Saturday. Just good luck in general. We actually really don't care about the result. We're all thinking about Sunday. We're thinking about the parade. And look, Mousinho is going to be fuming about the result against Wigan, regardless of the fact about the Oxford connection or whatever. He's a manager that's very much about system, about doing things right. And for him, that's a big part of our success. And I think he's going to feel the players let him down a little bit. So whilst he might let that one go, I think he's going to be like, right the wrong a little bit and give a good showing. Whether the players actually react to that, or whether they're thinking, I don't want to be stood on the open top bus with, a dodgy ankle, I think that's where it'll be. But I've got to say, it's basically up to you, to be honest. And you're a really good team. So you're at home, and I expect you to come out against us, and it's going to be a really tight game. I think there's goals in it with both our teams. So I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw. Do you have a prediction, Andy, while we're here? Let's just do our score predictions here.
Yeah, it's a difficult one because I was going to go with 1-1 as well, but I feel like that we're not really meant to all three of us agree, are we? So, I mean, I'll go with the 2-1 Pompey win just to give at least one of us thinking that Pompey are going to get the 3 points. But I don't say it with any heart or confidence or an overwhelming sense of intrigue, to be honest with you. I do think a draw is the most likely result, but yeah, I don't want to mimic you. And I also think that a draw would be enough. I can't see all of the teams. I can't see Barnsley, Oxford, and Blackpool all getting the results they need. Because as you say, Reading is a tough game. They are genuinely one of the better teams I've seen us play against this season. There was the first half against us at Fratton. They pretty much played us off the park in the same way that Leyton Orient and Blackpool did for some of that game that we lost to them at home. So, yeah, I'll go the 2-1 Pompey win. But in reality, I'm going for a draw and you guys making the playoffs. And hopefully just giving a lot of pain to Ian Everett in the playoff semi-final because he looks a little bit just done with it all. And I think one little push could be, we might see a fantastic post-match interview meltdown or snap at an interview, which is always good entertainment.
Yeah, exactly. And as we know, with the playoffs, you've got to be in it to win it. And exactly the same when Wickham scraped their way in on PPG and managed to get promoted. Not that Pompey fans are very happy how we managed to go out against Oxford in that one. But I think going in with form is always the best way to go into the playoffs rather than missing out on the automatics. And look, Bolton fans might say we can still get promoted automatically. Who knows? But I think Derby are pretty much up. I can't see them losing to Carlisle, let's be honest. So I think it's going to be a case of third versus sixth. So I think the likelihood, unless maybe you win, you beat us and Barnsley don't win and you take fifth spot and then you play Peterborough, but don't think there's much in it, is there? Who you'd rather play anyway against Peterborough or Bolton?
Peterborough would be a bit kind of local for us. I mean, we hate Peterborough because they've always thought they were bigger and they poached managers and players over the years. If we did get there, and I don't like talking too much ahead, but I think it would be the eighth playoff that we'd made without being promoted. We did five in a row, 03 till 07 to where we're, and then we didn't go up to Exeter. Funnily enough, it was Exeter, I think, who beat us in 2018, and then obviously Blackpool, who beat us in the final in 2021. So playoffs are not our friend. Peterborough, we haven't scored against in six meetings. Bolton did the double over us, I think, two seasons in a row, beat us 3-0 on the opening day. So, yeah, it doesn't really matter, does it? Either of them, the role we're on, doesn't matter.
What I'm hearing is you're due to beat them both. And to be honest with you, you're preaching to the choir on the playoff stuff. I think we've been around since 1898, and I don't think we've ever won a playoff leg, never mind an overall tie. I don't think we've won a single leg, have we, Hugh? I think that's one of our fun Portsmouth stats in over a century of play. So yeah, you're preaching to the converted on that one, Gaz.
Kenny Jackett trying to nail his way to Wembley was basically what happened.
Hey, Huddersfield did it to get to the Premier League, didn't they? Didn't they get through the playoffs without scoring a single goal?
There you go. That's probably what he did. He looked at it and was like, right, here we go. The Huddersfield way. Gary, it's been great having you on the podcast as always. Good luck for Saturday, genuinely. And potentially for the playoffs, if you make it. Don't want to curse you, boys. Don't want to be going back to that Pompey fan who said it too bold and that's the end of it. But why don't you tell people where they can find your stuff and also your EFL coverage as well?
So you can find any Lincoln City related stuff, not that you would want to if you're a Portsmouth fan, of course, at stacywest.net, where we do all the videos and all the usual stuff that people do. And then we also have The Real EFL, which is an EFL podcast, an EFL site and podcast covering Championship down to League Two. And that is at therealefl.co.uk.
Go and check that out, Pompey fans. I've been listening throughout the season. It is a good listen. And yeah, cheers for coming on the show and good luck, mate.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Gary, for coming on the podcast. Andy, quite untraditionally, we did our score predictions there with Gary because we were sort of enjoying the conversation, weren't we? It was flowing. It just seemed right. I already made my prediction on their pod as well. So we sort of tied it in all together, didn't we? So rather than going on talking about our super analysis about it leading up to our score predictions, as he sort of shrugs at my idea of super analysis, I just wanted to know, really, your feelings on this game. Do we really care? And is there a scenario that you want Pompey to go into this coming out just not with an embarrassing result?
No, I don't think you ever go into a game with that attitude, to be honest with you. You absolutely don't. That's certainly not where I'm coming from. Even though I'm making jokes about not giving a toss about the end result, etc. And at the end of the day, I'm not going to lose sleep over it. Having said that, there are players who are playing for, you know, potentially it's the lasting memory in John Messino's head as he goes away and considers contract negotiations, contract renewals. There are some players who could potentially get some minutes whose contracts are running down at the end of this season, and a number who've only got 1 year left on their contract. And, you know, they always say that when you have a conversation with someone, you remember the first thing they said, the last thing they said, and a little bit of the middle. This is kind of the last thing that he's going to see of them for competitive football for the season. So there's going to be a few of them needing to try and leave his memory of them as a very positive end result. Because he said this week, there are some people that have probably deserved to have a go in the Championship, but aren't necessarily going to get that, even though they've worked hard for it, which is a very difficult position for him to be in. So yeah, I don't think it's a completely free hit in all seriousness. I think there's still people paying to go from Portsmouth to watch the game, who are paying for travel, who are paying for accommodation, who are paying for match tickets. You've got to expect a certain level of performance. So I still wouldn't expect us to be at our best. I think at this level of football, you know, third tier football is still very, very high level in the big scheme of things. And being 2% off your game is potentially enough to be the difference between winning and losing at this level. So it wouldn't surprise me if they're 2% off their game, but I really wouldn't expect it to be as bad as the first half against Wigan. Because like I said during our chat, I do think that Messino will have quietly reminded them in polite but no uncertain terms that first half, you know, that's what they were trying to avoid. And they showed what they could do in that last 20 minutes, albeit with the Wigan side sitting back. So yeah, I don't think it's a free hit. I don't think it's a case of damage limitation. I think you go in looking to win that game. because that is momentum. Even with a break coming up, it's still momentum. And if you go into the Championship having lost your final two games in League One to sides that potentially, you know, neither of them went up at the end of the season, which is possible for Lincoln, it's not a great trajectory to be on as you start a new era in the league above. So if we lose the game, we're not going to give them pelters, are we? We're realistically, it's been an incredible season, but I think they will be expecting to perform a lot better than they did against Wigan.
Yeah, I think they're going to want to end on a high. And I think Messina don't want to be too hard on the players now that we just won the league and they've been out and they'd earned that. But at the same time, you could tell he was annoyed, and he's very much a manager of playing the right way in the system, isn't he? And, you know, we do play as a unit. And I do feel we're going to come out and try and right the wrongs, I suppose, Saturday in that sense. But as we said, I think it's going to be a draw. That's what I think. I know you were leaning that way anyway before giving your 2-1 prediction. So we're just going to have to see. It's a bit of an odd one to predict purely on that basis. You don't quite know where the motivation is, but I think they're going to be up for it. It's one of those games. It's the last one of the season, Andy. This is the last time we're predicting a game in League One for a bit, which is interesting.
Hopefully for a very long time.
Let's hope so.
That'd be nice.
We've been doing all our Championship prep anyway for a bit, so didn't want to say that out loud on the podcast, obviously.
Got to find a new group chat.
Got to do all those things in the background, but all right, mate, let's wrap this up.
Sure.
It's been great being on the podcast with you.
Thanks, bro. Yeah, good to chat. Hopefully we have a nice end of season review next year, complete with Freddie back and coming off a wonderful South Sea Common, honestly, booze up, or whatever your non-alcoholic beverage of choice is. We'll see you all down there. Also, just saying, happy birthday to me for Sunday. I intend to get wasted. And I don't do that often.
Triple celebration, the Pompey men, the Pompey women, and Andy's birthday.
And Tarrell's birthday on the Saturday. It's a big, big weekend of partying.
R.I.P. my liver. But until next time, play up Pompey.
You've been listening to the PO Forecast with Hugh, Andy and Freddie. Don't forget to leave a 5-star review on your podcast platform of choice and follow PO Forecast and Pompey News Now on Twitter for more information.